This is Solidarity News on Radio Labour.
This is a Radio Labour World Report recorded on Friday, June 2nd, 2023. I'm Mark Belanger. In the report this week, the UN Declaration of Human Rights and labour as a commodity. A new wave of artificial intelligence in the workplace. The Labour Start report about union events and singing.
Nothing but buttons and bells and lights all over the factory.
This is Radio Labour.
Everyone has the right to freedom of peaceful assembly and association. Everyone has the right to work, to free choice of employment, to just and favourable conditions of work, and to protection against unemployment. Everyone, without any discrimination, has the right to equal pay for equal work. 3. Everyone who works has the right to just and favourable remuneration, ensuring for himself and his family an existence worthy of human dignity, and supplemented, if necessary, by other means of social protection. 4. Everyone has the right to form and to join trade unions.
That is the American diplomat Eleanor Roosevelt reading parts of the UN Declaration of Human Rights. The declaration was adopted after the horrors of the Second World War and the realization that peace can only be achieved if there is social justice. Recently, the International Labour Organization held a webinar on the relationship between the declaration and its foundational principles. The ILO is the UN specialized agency focused on matters of work in the world. One of the speakers at the webinar was the chair of the workers' group at the ILO, Kathleen Pesquier from the Netherlands. She mentions the ILO's 1944 Declaration of Philadelphia, which declared that labor was not some good to be sold in the marketplace. She also mentions the ILO's Convention 87, which is an international law that calls for freedom of association. In other words, the right to join a labor union. Ms. Pesquier.
Let me start by emphasizing again the uniqueness of the ILO, which goes back to 1919. Many people don't realize how unique it was that in 1919 the ILO was established, which is a labor organization after the war. It was really the recognition that if you want to do something about peace, you have to start with social justice. But to start with social justice, recognizing that you need employers and workers on board, not just as advisors, but really as participants, as taking responsibility, as being part of decision-making, that was unique. There were, I think, almost no countries at all in the world that did have a system like that already in place. So I think that's really important to emphasize. Yes, solidarity, but also adversarial issues. And in 1919, there were a number of them. But I think the importance was the recognition that you, if you want to make progress together, you have to sit down, listen to each other, negotiate progress. If it comes to the preconditions for that, to be able to play that role, unions have to be independent. Independent from government and independent from enterprise. And the other way around, business has to be independent from government. And that is a fundamental starting point, I think. The second thing is that if I look into how the UN has developed its notion of civic space, it's really important to realize, and I took this from this UN guidance note from 2020, that says civic space is the environment that enables people and groups to participate meaningfully in the political, economic, social, and cultural life of their societies. It means that those actors should be able to express themselves freely in full security and affect change peacefully and effectively. And this requires mechanisms that allow effective access to information, dialogue, and the expression of dissenting and unpopular views. And to allow for dissenting views and unpopular views to be expressed is part of democratic and civic space. And let me then come to what is the strong concern on the union side. When societies suppress the voices of unions, when they don't allow freedom of association, when they stop unions from doing what they're trying to achieve, then very often also civic space is in danger. And that is why we think it is very, very timely that today we are expressing the importance of the Convention 87 and the Declaration of Human Rights and how they relate to each other, where unions cannot participate and be active freely and independently. Very often other actors also cannot do that. The ITUC, the International Trade Union Confederation, has a global rights index tracking a decade-long erosion of workers' organization and collective bargaining rights, very closely connected to restrictions of freedom of speech in the assembly. And in our view, there is another strong connection, which is the importance of the Philadelphia Declaration, putting an emphasis on the fact that labor is not a commodity. And part of the weakening of unions and of also the difficulty for unions to be able to organize and have some counter power in the debate is because of the commodification of labor. We see the informal economy not reducing, but expanding. We see migration flows leading to a lot of migrants, legal and illegal, although we always say there is no illegal people. Yep. Regular and irregular migration that are providing a lot of work to societies, but without rights. And we see women workers struggling to get access to labor markets on proper terms. And many of these groups, precarious work increasing, many of these groups have difficulty to really exercise their rights to freedom of association, collective bargaining. And that reduces also the power of unions to really demand and require to be taken seriously and to contribute to the well-being of their societies.
Predictions of employment upheaval and job losses are being made as a new wave of artificial intelligence hits workplaces. The latest development comes from a company called OpenAI. In November 2022, it released a program called ChatGPT. The program is being used to produce human-like conversation, compose emails, write essays, and create computer code. To explore the implications of ChatGPT, the International Labour Organization produced a podcast on the topic.
Hello, and welcome to the ILO's Future of Work podcast. I'm Sophie Fisher. This program is where we explore some of the key trends that are shaping the world of work. And few of those trends are as hot right now, or as hotly debated, as the effects of artificial intelligence, or AI. What's brought this into the headlines is the launch of ChatGPT. ChatGPT is a natural language processing tool driven by AI technology. Two things seem to make it particularly interesting, or scary, depending upon your point of view. The first is how well it seems to be able to mimic human language. It can answer questions or write text or code. And the second is how quickly it has been adopted. Within 2 months of launch, it had attracted more than 100 million users. It's clear from this that the impact of artificial intelligence on the world of work is not something we need to plan for in the future. It's here and it's now, and we need to deal with it. So to discuss how the world of work might do this, I have with me Antonio Casilli, who is a professor of sociology at the Polytechnic Institute of Paris and is co-director of the Deep Lab Research Group. Welcome, Antonio.
Thank you.
Massive amounts of hype around ChatGPT. ChatGPT is one form of artificial intelligence. We are told that this time it is going to revolutionize the world of work. Is this true or is this hype?
Well, first of all, thank you for not pulling the number. This intro was written by ChatGPT. A lot of journalists tend to do it.
Yes, this was written by a human.
I really appreciate it. Well, anyways, so my point is that basically there is a lot of hype, as you pointed out, and this hype is actually produced or prompted by the very persons who produce ChatGPT. OpenAI is a company that has to sell a product, and this product is, of course, destined to be used in several industries. in training, in consulting, in software development. So, of course, they are interested in us believing that it's going to revolutionize the sectors.
Here with his report about union events is Labor Start correspondent Derek Blackadder.
This week, our top story section included links to the news that almost 30,000 Canadian television and radio performers marked the end of 12 months on the picket line, with no end in sight to the lockout by commercial engagers. We also carried stories about the renewal of the global campaign to free union activists in Belarus and the leadership crisis in the Danish labor movement. A random sample from our news pages this week includes articles from India, where trade unions are demonstrating in support of women wrestlers accusing a wrestling federation official with close ties to the Modi government of sexual harassment and assault, an organizing push by garment workers in Uganda, and a big win for casino workers in Nepal. A theme in this week's coverage of labor news from around the globe is the growing evidence that wage theft is a common practice with employers, large and small. The latest evidence of this is the discovery by Australian unions that transnational mining giant BHP has been shorting tens of thousands of workers on their pay for years. This week, our Working Women news page carried news of a campaign to end sexual harassment of garment workers in Bangladesh, why women don't earn the same pension entitlements as men in the United Kingdom, and the exclusion of women from the social dialogue process in Sri Lanka. Stories appearing on our health and safety page in Newswire this week include a nurses' strike in New Zealand over safe staffing levels, the assassination of yet another journalist in the Philippines, and from around the world, items on the ways in which unions are confronting employers who demand that employees work outdoors in excessive heat. Our current photo of the week is a shot of retired U.S. union members demanding that the bank which administers their pension plan adopt a green investment strategy. This is Derek Blackadder from Labor Start, reporting for Radio Labor.
Now here is the American folk singer Joe Glazer.
I went down, down, down to the factory early on a Monday morning. When I got down to the factory, it was lonely, it was forlorn. I couldn't find Joe, Jack, John, or Jim. Nobody could I see. Nothing but buttons and bells and lights all over the factory. Well, I walked, walked, walked into the foreman's office to find out what was what. I looked him in the eye and I said, what goes? This is the answer I got. His eyes turned red, then green and blue, and it suddenly dawned on me. There was a robot sitting in the seat where the foreman used to be. Well, I walked all around, up and down, across that factory. I watched all the buttons and the bells and the lights. It was a mystery to me. I hollered Hank, Frank, Ike, Mike, Joe, Jack, Don, Dan, Roy, Ray, Ed, Fred, Pete. And a great big mechanical voice boomed out, all your buddies are obsolete. All your buddies are obsolete. All your buddies are obsolete. Well, I was scared, scared, scared. I was worried, I was sick as I left that factory. Decided that I had to see the president of the whole darn company. When I got up to his office, he was rushing out the door with a scowl upon his face. For there was a great big mechanical executive sitting in the president's place. I went home, 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 my ever-loving wife. I told about the factory. She kissed me, she hugged me, she cried a little bit as she sat on my knee. Now I don't understand all the buttons and the bells, but there's one thing I will say. I thank the Lord that love's still made in the good old-fashioned way.
And that's it. Labor news you can use. Thank you for listening. And remember, It's all about global solidarity.